Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod, still here in Vegas, NBA Summer League with Will Hardy, the new head coach of the Utah Jazz. Will, how are you?
I'm great. It's been a fun last week, a lot going on.
Do you still wake up in the morning and like open your eyes and go and have to take a minute to like process, I'm the head coach in Utah and everyone's going to come to me with 1,000 things today?
Yeah, I definitely, it's sinking in more and more each day. You know, just not only the responsibility that comes with it, but just that every day is a kind of a moving target right now as we're, you know, in this transition phase. And, you know, I'm lucky that I have a lot of people that are helping me get through all this on our staff. And it's been fun. The way I describe it is it's been noisy, not stressful.
You know, it's funny when you take a job over, Will, sometimes the job is being offered to you. It's open because the last coach did not have success, was losing. There's quote unquote a bad culture. This is a fairly unique NBA situation in that the coach you're taking over for had very good success. You know Quinn Snyder well. How have you looked at that when you come in to talk about implementing how you're going to do things, but also knowing there was habits and a structure and things in place that aren't necessarily worth overturning, right?
Yeah, I actually look at it as, you know, a point of strength, you know, almost a little bit of an advantage. You know, I do know Quinn well and did an amazing job here. The organization is in a really, really good spot right now before I walked in the door. So the infrastructure that was set up, you know, not only by him but by the rest of the staff here in Utah has really put me in a position where I can focus on the big things because all those things are already in place. So I'm actually thrilled about it. Like, I really look at it as a point of strength for us right now and something that's making this transition easier for me.
All the advice you get from people about sort of the first 30, 60, 90 days, putting a staff together, the summer, getting to know the players, is there one or two pieces of this period that resonated with you about how you sort of handle the initial window of time of getting things in place?
Yeah, I have gotten a lot of advice on it, and the best advice I've gotten is you just have to take it as it comes at you. It's easy to have a plan. It's easy to have, you know, the PowerPoint presentation that says this is what I'm going to do in my first 90 days, and then day one is completely different than you thought, and things come your way that you weren't expecting. So it's that, as well as, you know, accept help from other people. Like, let the staff help you. Let people help you, because there's one of the transitions for me right now is that there's so many people in our organization that are looking to me, kind of waiting for orders at times, it feels like. Like, how can I help you today? And that's a weird transition because, you know, 12 years in the NBA, I wasn't giving the instructions. Like, I was carrying out the actions for the head coach and for the organization. So it's weird transitioning to that place of, like, delegating. Like, you are the person that gets to do that. And getting used to, like, not feeling like I'm putting people out or putting them in a tough spot or adding stuff to their plate, because they're all looking at me going, no, this is what we're here for. So that's been an interesting adjustment for me, and I feel like I'm getting a little bit better at it every day because we have so many people here that are, like, just ready to help every day.
So from the day, Will, you accept the job, obviously there's dramatic change on the roster. You get hired, and I think one of the first things you do, you reach out to your players on the team, and that starts with Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert. What's that been like? And you know change. You've been in the NBA long enough. You know change comes, decisions are made. You knew that, I think you knew the Rudy trade was a possibility. There were a lot of possibilities. Right. You could have just stayed here. What was that like in the first, you know, short window of time to, you know, you reach out, you start talking, and then all of a sudden you look and you've got a very different canvas to start thinking about preparing off of, right, for training camp?
Yeah, you know, I've said that to start this process, I'm really not as concerned with the basketball part right now. I really want to try to give the time and attention necessary to the relationships and getting to know the players on our team and the staff. I want to get to know them as people, and I want them to get to know me as a person before I'm a coach. And so, you know, those transitions have huge basketball implications for us in terms of how we're going to play and what the team will look like in between the lines. But for me, I'm really just focused on the personal part. And so, yeah, when I first got the job, I reached out to all the guys on the roster, and then I just treated them like they were guys on our team. And then when things change, things change. But we weren't going too deep into X's and O's or tactics or style of play or anything like that. So it's really just been about the personal part. Obviously, in your head, you're thinking about, you know, what's coming, and training camp's a couple months away. It's hard to fight that, but I'm really just trying to focus on those personal relationships right now, understanding that things do change sometimes.
You have history with Donovan Mitchell. You got to know him being around USA Basketball,
right,
with Greg Popovich and, you know, different iterations of the national team and summers. How valuable was that, like, you had a reference point with him when you walked in the door?
Yeah, huge. I was fortunate to get to know Donovan in the summer of 2019. Those USA Basketball experiences are so unique because you get really big blocks of time with guys. You're out of the country, you're in this little cocoon of, like, it's just the travel party, and there's really nowhere to go. So we got to spend a lot of time together. I remember spending time, you know, I would take Donovan the film after every game and put it on his laptop. He always wanted to watch the film, and so I would end up, while the game was loading on his laptop, we would just sit in his room and chat. And sometimes it was about the game, and sometimes it wasn't. It was about life or a TV show or whatever. And, you know, so since then, every time I see him during the season, we would always chat pregame or postgame. And, you know, I never thought that this would be the situation that our relationship would be in, where I'm the head coach of a team that he's on. But I think, you know, we start at such a good point because when our relationship started, we weren't trying to get anything from each other. Like, it was very normal and natural, and, you know, we were just two people that were a part of the journey with USA Basketball. So I think it's really given us a head start, and I'm excited to work with him.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand slams, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Your time in San Antonio, a decade plus, and being around a head coach in Greg Popovich who put a great deal of value on building those relationships, is that in your mind where, I guess, the value of it, the importance of it, and how to do it organically and not in a forced, contrived way? I mean, how much does that influence maybe how you deal with players, how you've learned to build relationships with players off of the relationships. You were there, you know, from the video room to the back of the bench with Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. And you see that there's ups and downs to them. It's not always just great.
Right.
But how head coach and players work through stuff and sort of have that baseline of trust that allows a thing to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. Pop and the Spurs are such a great example of, you know, caring about the human part before you care about the basketball part. And I think those relationships just give you a foundation to be able to be honest with each other. There's moments during a season where you have to have hard conversations, and there's moments during the season where everybody's frustrated and you're trying to figure out solutions. And that, you know, personal capital that's built up, it allows you to have those moments of real honesty with each other. You know, and I'm lucky that I've had a lot of coaches in my life that I still have close relationships with. Like, I experienced this in my own, albeit unimpressive, playing career. Like, I still talk to my high school coach once every 2 weeks. I still talk to Mike Maker, who coached me in college, once every couple weeks. Like, those guys, like, cared about me as a person, and we always had such a great relationship. So I feel like I've been on the other side of it too. And, you know, both those guys had to have hard conversations with me as a player when I wasn't playing well. So that's the part of basketball and of team sports to me that I enjoy the most. Like, I want to win. I'm very competitive. But the stuff away from the court, the relationships that can last you for a lifetime, like, not to sound cliche, like, that stuff is important, and that's the part that's fun. You know, you mentioned Tony Parker. I saw him last night, you know, here at Summer League, and it was really cool just to catch up. Like, he was so excited for me, and, you know, he's making jokes about the first day you came to San Antonio, you know, who would have thought that you'd be here? And it's just fun to carry those relationships on. Like, basketball is super important, but there's so much going on away from that, you know, with families and friendships. Yeah, it's the best part of team sports.
When you think back to the beginning in San Antonio, and you go from intern, video room, into coaching meetings, what was it like when it's Greg Popovich and a staff that was a highly accomplished coaching staff and a championship-level team? What is it like at the beginning where you're trying to, how should I speak up? When should I speak up? Do I have the confidence in what I'm about to say to speak up? What is that like for someone who's working his way up and you're walking into one of the great dynasties in league history?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to find that footing sometimes of, you are in a coach's meeting with, you know, it's not just Pop. It's, I mean, Mike Budenholzer and Brett Brown and Jacque Vaughn and Ime Udoka, James Borrego, Ettore Messina. I mean, the list of people that I've worked with is unbelievable. And, you know, you better be prepared. And I think that's where it started, was like, I watched all those assistants interact with Pop for years, and very rarely were people just shooting from the hip. Like, they had done research. They had really thought through these arguments that they had to bring to the table. Because it is, you know, it's intimidating, especially when you start out. You know, I think I was really lucky as the video coordinator. I spent so much time with Pop one-on-one watching film that we ended up having some one-on-one conversations or disagreements about a clip. And I think he did that intentionally. Like, he would always kind of stoke the fire a little bit. And in situations where it was kind of obvious what the right thing to say was, he may take the other side of an argument just to see if I'll fold or not. But we had those one-on-one times where I developed a little bit of a comfort with Pop. And so then when you go to the meeting room, I'm comfortable with Pop, and so if there's a moment where I have to disagree with him, you know, I've done it a little bit. That being said, it's hard, man. Like, you always are second-guessing right before you say it, like, should I say this right now? But he always created such an atmosphere for all of us as assistants where he wanted debate, he wanted disagreement, he wanted us to really dig in and try to find the right answer. So I feel really lucky to have been a part of all that. And also to be able to have grown sort of organically within the organization, I never felt like it was too much all at once. Like, I just kind of slowly kept bumping up just a little bit.
To me, one of the most fascinating 2-year windows that I've since I've been covering the NBA, was the window from 2013, Spurs losing in Game 6, in Game 7, being as close as you could be to winning a title, and
right.
the balls tipped back out to Ray Allen, and then Game 7, to the next year, the training camp in Colorado, and the climb back up the mountain, and then absolutely destroying Miami in that final, really just, and you saw, I remember talking to Manu about this, and the emotion, we were talking about that, the clinching game, and him being in the huddle, and you guys were winning big, and he remembers talking about, like, take it to 15, take it to 20, take, right. like, let's, you know, and it was like, I just wonder about being around that team, and seeing the absolute devastation after you lose, and wondering, I don't know, can we climb it again, and,
right.
and being around, I just wonder what that was like, what you remember learning from it, and does that stretch stay with you like it would some me on the outside looking in? It just felt like just as unique of a window in time as you could ever have being part of a team.
Yeah, no doubt it sticks with me. That was not fun until we won. That year was probably the hardest year that I've been a part of in the NBA because there was so much frustration and some anger and, you know, some devastation from that year before. Like, I mean, I remember being in the locker room after the finals. Like, I'd never seen guys, like, just so broken in that moment. Like, how did this just happen? But then to come back the next year, like, I've also never seen a group of people so possessed with accomplishing something. You know, coaches a lot talk about, like, doing hard things and all that. Like, for that group to dig in and do what they did that year is still one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. Because, as we all know, NBA seasons are long. And so it's not like you get the gratification of winning, you know, 2 months later, hey, we're going to just bounce back and we'll win this tournament and then it'll be over. You got to go 82 games and then you got to gruel through the playoffs. And I mean, the series that's never talked about in that championship year is we played Dallas in 7 games in the first round. I mean, we were down 2-1. Vince Carter hit a game winner in Game 3 to beat us. And you're in the locker room going, somewhere in your head, you're like, are we really going to lose in the first round after all that? You know, just the determination of that group, the leadership of Tim and Tony and Manu and Pop, like, to really drive us back to get the chance in the finals and then ultimately to do it was really special to be a part of. Like, I have a great sense of pride to have been a part of that group because, you know, that was just such a collective effort to get that done.
When you look at that as a training ground, all these experiences are adding to what you're going to be as a head coach in the league. Is there a part of you that's like, what we had there was so unique and will probably never be replicated, that my base of reference on the NBA and team building and all the things, I'm never probably going to experience anything like that, the uniqueness of the players and the group, how you have to look at going to build your own team in your own environment, that it just can't be, I'm going to replicate what Pop had. I'm right. going to replicate what that is, because how do you take from that but know it was almost a utopia?
Yeah, I feel really fortunate to have been a part of the San Antonio Spurs for 11 years and to have had all those experiences. You know, I'm not Pop, and I know that, and he knows that, and he's given me that advice for years. Like, don't try to be anybody but you, because players, coaches, the NBA, the world sniffs out people that are not being authentic to themselves. I guess the best way I can describe it is, like, I feel like I have very similar values to Pop, to the Spurs, but my personality is different than Pop. And I have to go about this in a way that is authentic to me. And that's my goal as we start this process, is, like, I have to do it in a way that is authentic to me and to my personality. Like, I'm not trying to replicate Pop. And I would love it if Tim Duncan was on our team, but he's not. Like, these are just unique, not just players, but people. And I think we have some great players and great people in Utah, and so I have to try to help them create an environment that's authentic to them. Like, I think our team in San Antonio, my experience there was, it was just as much, you know, Tim, Tony, and Manu's personality as it was Pop's. Like, it was the collection of those people created that environment that was so unique. And so it's my job to try to help create that environment in Utah where it's authentic to me, but it's also authentic to Donovan and to the rest of our players, where we all feel like, no, this is representative of us and how we want to do it.
The decision to leave San Antonio and go to Boston with Ime, mm-hmm. what were those conversations like with Pop and Ime about, this is a step that's going to be beneficial for me, why?
Yeah, Ime and I had worked together for 7 years in San Antonio, and we had developed a really close relationship, you know, not only as coworkers but as friends. And so we had always talked about basketball and program building and what do you like about this or that, as assistants always do. And then he left, and he went to Philly, and then he was in Brooklyn. And I remember talking to him while he was there, and he always would say to me how good it was for him. He was seeing something completely different. He was seeing a different part of the NBA. He was dealing with different players, different organizations, and learning how to be, you know, flexible in those situations. And so he had always talked about it with me, and, you know, I was receptive to it. Like, I understood what he was saying. So then he gets the job in Boston, and he calls, and it's sort of like, hey, man, remember that thing we've been talking about? You know, let's do it. And to be able to have that opportunity with somebody that you know and you love and you care about in Ime, you know, Brad Stevens' reputation speaks for itself, the kind of human being that he is. Like, he's going to be the president. You're like, those are people that I could see myself doing it with. But it was hard. It was a hard conversation with Pop because, you know, I felt in debt to him and to the organization because, like, I'm comfortable saying that I worked really hard and that I tried to be a good person, but I'm also not naive to the fact that, you know, the Spurs made me in some ways. Like, they continued to give me opportunity on top of opportunity, and they were always so good to me and my family. And so it was hard. I went to Pop, and basically, you know, it's like, if you don't want me to go, I won't go. And, you know, in typical Pop fashion, like, he never for one second made me feel guilty or, like, how could you do this to me? He was very matter of fact. Let's talk about the good reasons to go, and let's talk about the negatives of going, and let's talk about it. And he and I sat down and had a really long conversation, and by the end, he was great. He's basically, you have to go.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
You had interviewed for other head jobs in both San Antonio and then coming to Boston. You were sort of a product of the pandemic interview era, right?
Yeah.
Lots of Zooms.
Yeah.
And lots of people in the little boxes, right, when you're interviewing. What was that like? Because you interviewed, I mean, we go through, we reported, you know, New York and Oklahoma City. We can go back. Those were Spurs. And then into Boston, that was sort of a period of time where, like, what's that like trying to sell yourself into the little boxes on the laptop?
Yeah, I used to joke with my wife, like, you know, I'm clearly electric on Zoom. Like, this is just, I'm really good at it, like, joking sarcastically. Like, I always felt like I bombed every time on Zoom because there's no human interaction. There's no eye contact. There's no body language. There's no personal connection, I feel like. And I get it's, you know, you have to do what you have to do. But it's just it's a stale environment. And it's hard to create those little personal connections. And so I walked away from every one of those Zooms seriously thinking, like, I think I bombed. Because people aren't really giving you much feedback. They would ask a question and you're answering and you're talking into the screen and you don't really know where to look. And then it ends and everybody's just kind of staring back into their screen. And then somebody else asks another question and you're going like, oh, this isn't going great. It's hard. I think there's so many people in our business that are just like, they're dynamic personalities and they're fun to be around and sit with face to face. And then you put them on a Zoom and it's like, we all become robots in some ways. It's clearly not something that I've figured out yet. You know, I kept telling my wife with the Utah thing, like, let me just get to the face-to-face one. Somehow, let me get to the in-person interview, and then I'll feel like I have a chance if I can just get in front of them and be with them in person. So the Zoom thing is really hard, man. There's a lot of coaches obviously going through it. I feel for them.
What was this one like with Utah, Danny Ainge, Justin Zanuck, Ryan Smith, Dwayne Wade? Once you got, like you said, past that and you're able to get in front of those guys, how did this one feel different than the others, or just the connectivity with that group? Yeah. What was that like?
It was stressful at the end because I really wanted it. And I got there. I had felt good about our conversations kind of leading up to it. Not that I had done well on the Zoom, but I had felt good about who they were and like what they were representing as people and as an organization and what they wanted to do. And so when I got there in person, you know, you're nervous because it's important and you want it at that point, right? Like you're like, no, I'm close. And so when I got to sit with all of them individually, you know, for over an hour each person, and got to have individual conversations, and after every conversation, I was like, I thought we got along great, and I think this person is really going to be important for me. And so when I finished the conversations, it was like this pit in your stomach, because you're like, you just start thinking like, what if I don't get it? Like, I'm going to be devastated, because that group of people you just named, like as a collective, I can't think of a better group for not just a young coach or a first-time coach, but any coach. Like their you know, variety of experiences, whether it's in business or Dwayne and Danny's playing career, but Danny's also coached, and Danny's been an executive he's been in the NBA 44 years, and Justin's experience as an executive. And, you know, that group collectively, like they just provide such a unique support system for a coach because they've seen this from so many different angles. So I was sick to my stomach for 2 days, and when I saw my phone rang and it said Danny Ainge on it, like I turned to my wife and was like, this is either going to be awesome or I'm like not going to speak for a couple days. And I went in the other room and took the call, and thank goodness the call was what it was.
What does a coach want from management, from ownership? What should a coach want from them to do the job?
Honest communication. A shared conversation of where you actually are as a team. I think sometimes people get on different pages of like where the team actually is. And then support. NBA seasons are hard and they never go as planned and they're never perfect. There's always a rough patch. Even, you know, teams that win the championship have a rough patch in that season. And I think the ability to just maintain kind of some emotional stability is huge, because the coaching part is already emotional. Like you're front and center, and the wins and the losses, they weigh on you. So I think just having that support every day from them, and the ability for you to have open and honest conversations about the reality of your situation, is what you want as a coach.
Would you have imagined, when you think about when you started in San Antonio, to go from intern, video room, back of the bench, front of the bench, you know, you look at the resumes of other coaches and they might start to get interviews in their 40s, and they might get their first job at 46, 47, or they may never get a job. When all of a sudden you start to get interviews in your early 30s, and then you start to get, I think, deeper into processes, and you feel like maybe the first time or two, I'm getting an interview, I'm not sure I'm going to get the job.
Right.
And then you start to interview for jobs, you go, I think I can get this. I know you never know with the clock, but were there times where you said, like, this is moving pretty fast.
Absolutely. You know, the first interview I did was with the Knicks, and I got a call from Pop to say, hey, that the Knicks have reached out and they would like permission to speak to you. And my response seriously on the phone was, but I don't want to go be an assistant for the Knicks. Like, I like my job here. Like, I'm cool. I don't need to, like, move up on the bench or anything. And Pop goes, no, they want to interview for the head coaching job. And I was like, Pop, this is Will. And he's like, I know. I was like, okay, hold on, I need to take a second and, like, think about this. Like, it came out of nowhere for me. So, I was surprised and humbled and honored and all those things. Like, you're just, wait, they think of me like that? And then you just feel, again, like, in these moments and, like, right when I got the job in Utah, like, the first thing I thought about was, like, all the people along the way and all the dominoes that fell in certain directions to kind of lead me here. Like, there's a lot of hard work that goes in, but there's also a lot of mentorship from other people and them giving their time and energy to teach you. And there's a lot of good timing, you know, people taking jobs in San Antonio that were above me that allowed me to move up, like I said, organically within the organization. Most time in the NBA, to move up, you have to go somewhere else. And so there's a lot of good fortune in there too. But yeah, when all the interviewing for head coaching jobs started, like, I was really taken aback because I never really thought about people looking at me like that.
You mentioned about you think about people in your life and getting there. You know, you lost your dad a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's different landmarks in your life with your own kids, and then you get a head coaching job. I imagine when you're in Salt Lake and, you know, Danny calls and you got the job and you agree to a deal and then you go do the press conference, that I would imagine that's one of the moments where you think, boy, I wish we were sharing this.
Yeah. You know, I lost my dad in 2015 to ALS. He was diagnosed in 2013. That's a nasty disease. And I feel lucky that I didn't lose him abruptly. Like, I got to have a lot of conversations with him that I probably wouldn't have gotten to had, you know, his life ended more tragically, I guess. So, like, that's my silver lining of that part is, like, I really got to have conversations with my dad that I wouldn't have ever thought to have. But, yeah, like, when there's a big moment like that, like, you do, I miss him. I wish he had been there to celebrate that with us because he was always so supportive of me, like, doing this job. You know, this job is hard on families. You miss birthdays, holidays, weddings, funeral. I mean, you just miss a lot. And that's part of this job. Like, there's so many positives to this job, but time is hard in the NBA because the schedule is, especially now, it's 365 days a year. Like, this is not the season and the off season, you know, see you when school's back in session. Like, it's not like that at all. I mean, you know that more than anybody. So, yeah, like, I wish he was here to see it because I think he'd be really, really happy. Yeah, I miss him.
When you look at Utah, too, it's an organization. You know, it's funny, you mentioned the Spurs, and Pop and R.C. Buford will always talk about when they started out, they were trying to emulate the Jazz. And Dennis Lindsay, when mm-hmm. he was running the team here, would talk about having been in San Antonio and remembering those, a little bit of a circular thing, because this was a place that had the same coach, legendary Hall of Fame coach Jerry Sloan, for a very long time, and
right.
had stability and had a way of doing things and had a program and had great success. But for the most part, and even though ownership has changed, that it's been a place, and Danny Ainge is somebody who values the position of head coach. Like, people, you look at Doc Rivers early in Boston when a lot of people wanted him to pull the plug, and Danny said, this is on me. I haven't gotten good enough players. Like,
right.
He withstood a lot of pressure and hires Brad Stevens, who's a college coach, I think gave him
cover
to a coach. That has to be organizationally, listen, you have to have success wherever you go, and it's going to be measured in different ways. But
right.
But just sort of having that coming in, that you've got sort of that bedrock of that, of this place, right?
Yeah, it's a challenge and a responsibility that, you know, I don't take lightly. You know, after the press conference, we walked out onto the arena floor, and obviously I've been in the arena before, but it's a way different feeling when you come out of the home tunnel And then you look up and you see Jerry Sloan's name, and you see Stockton, and you see Malone, and you see Frank Layden, and you're like, oh, like, this is a big tradition in Utah. And this is a place that has had a lot of success and has deep pride for not only, like, what the organization has done, but how they've done it. And that's from ownership, that's to the people in the organization, that's to the fan base. Like, we have a crazy fan base, and I understand that. That's also the exciting part of this, is like, it's meaningful, and you're going to have a lot of people in your corner that want the team to be great. It's been walking around Salt Lake last week and having people on the street say, like, welcome to Utah, we're really pulling for you. Like, it's been fun. That stuff is super energizing, and, you know, I really look forward to it.
Well, this was great, Will. Your first 100 days on the job, you are well into it, but yeah. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you got more summer league to take in here, but I know we'll catch up soon.
Absolutely, Will. Thank you.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.